All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. We're sponsored by Tony Shuler and Pinnacle Medical Plus. We've got a fantastic show. Somebody once said, it's always sunny at Banks Law. And here we are. How are you, Sonny?
I'm doing great. Job about yourself?
I'm great. Drew said to me today, and Drew, Andrew Walker is our co-producer who also runs the show. Get here late today. He said, the show's going to be late. And next thing you know, we have a VIP guest, and he misled me. Now I throw him right under the bus because I know we got a great personal injury lawyer.
Absolutely.
And he's going to get paid.
See, and what I always say is deny. Anything. It's never your fault, sweetheart.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I was an iron worker for most of my young early married life, and that was what the fellas say. Deny, deny, deny. No matter what the situation is.
See, he knows I have a Villanova game to get to tonight, so he's trying to throw a monkey wrench.
He is. You are out of control, mister.
That's right.
If you would, Sonny, introduce our guest as if she needs an introduction, but let's just do it anyway.
Joe, we're fortunate again to have attorney Marina Katz with us. Marina has her own firm in Bucks County or the greater Northeast, as well as offices in New York and New Jersey. The focus of her practice is serious personal injury cases of all types, family and immigration law, real estate law, and commercial and criminal law. Marina is very active in the Russian community in Northeast Philly. She has a Master's of Law from the Beasley School of Law at Temple, making her one of very few women in the country to possess an LLM in trial advocacy. She's also very active in politics, both regionally and nationally, and she is an ardent supporter of her alma mater, Temple Law School. Marina is a polished professional when it comes to appearing on radio, having been the past president and on-air personality of a weekly AM radio show. Marina, if you would, please remind our listeners about yourself and about your law firm.
You know what? I was listening to all these accolades, and it sounds like my mother wrote it, but I do want to say a couple more things about my alma mater.
Absolutely.
Go Owls, go Temple. I'm also a trustee at Temple University. And our student just went back in person. Unfortunately, we have now a very strict mask policy, but at least we have students in class in person, which is a big advocate of in-person learning.
I am too. I mean, I think it would be extremely difficult to go to college remotely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are some people, imagine being a freshman in college.
Yeah.
And not getting that experience, let alone a sophomore, junior, senior, or your senior year.
But in particular, a freshman at college,
God.
Because I think that those relationships that you develop as a freshman are lifelong.
No question about it.
And I'm not only practicing what I preach also, because my youngest daughter, and I'm going to give a plug for her because I know she's listening to our show today, is also a student at Temple Medical School.
Oh, fantastic.
So, you know how I always say every lawyer wishes that their children become doctors, and every doctor wishes that their children become a lawyer. So in my case, thank God now we have in the family a financial person, which is my oldest daughter, a doctor, God's willing, in a couple years, and a lawyer. Sorry about that.
Hold on for 1 second. I got that.
That's the hotline.
By the way, that's a fantastic phone. What
it
a great
is.
Ring. It almost sounded like it was coming through.
It's all fine. Now, my practice is mainly personal injury. We do the third-party claims. We refer a lot of our workmen come to Sonny because we know Sonny will make you money. And we get referral back from Sonny for third-party claims. We also do a lot of other stuff. We have somebody who specializes in immigration. We have somebody who does a family law. We have somebody who does a criminal. So when you come to my office, we are able to service many of the client's needs,
sure.
Which is important,
right,
you know.
Right.
Client doesn't want to be introduced every time to the new firm and the new lawyer. This way, once you become our client, for most of the needs, we could service it, and the client become a client for life. And I'm going to date myself, unfortunately. I've been in practice for 33 years, so one thing is fortunate it's been that long. Now I am actually taking care of children and grandchildren of my clients.
Wow.
So that's come in now as clients themselves. And it's actually lovely.
But that's got to be a great form of flattery when, you know, when an individual send their family to you. I mean, and, you know, you've been successful for a very long time. But, you know, one of the somebody just said this. With Google being around, there's no escaping anything.
Yep.
Okay, so you put your money where your mouth is, and that's a fantastic thing.
It is more than fantastic. And it's God bless me with a good memory, because I have a client calling me back that were my client 30 years ago saying, Marina, you don't remember me, but I remember that person. I actually, probably in a year we get, I don't know, somewhere 700 clients. I remember virtually every client that came through my office, because their problem becomes your problem. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can't solve it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Marina, it's funny. I see you a lot more than you would imagine, because I live in East Falls. Whenever I get on Fox Street, I see Marina Katz, and I say to my wife, there's Marina right there.
Yeah, we have a big sign going north on the Roosevelt Boulevard.
Right, and so, but I think that one of the things, and I don't know if you know this or if you've been told this, but we've done several shows together, and you have a command. Okay, a good feeling, you know, you get a good feeling, but also,
absolutely,
you know, somebody that, you know, you could feel comfortable representing you and standing, you know, behind you and knowing that you're, you know, you're passionate about what you do.
You get that feeling that Marina's in charge, but you also have that comfort level.
That's right.
Where she's going to lead you in the right direction.
Exactly. And that's why I'm mystified at why Drew Walker would make me come in here late. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry, Drew.
And that's actually a good segue, because I think you said in past appearances, or actually you explained in past appearances, how you put everything together at your office and how you developed the culture in terms of hiring experienced attorneys to do the immigration work, the criminal work, et cetera, as opposed to teaching those folks. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. An interesting thing about it, I had the other day Dean of Temple Law School in my office for lunch, and she said to me, you have such a good feeling. It feels like everybody here wants to be here. And my accountant says to me, Marina, your office is like Cheers. You never know who's actually working or who is just coming to hang out. And I like that.
Sure.
I create this atmosphere of everybody should feel comfortable, because a lot of people don't know lawyers. A lot of people don't feel comfortable or feel intimidated by the lawyer and afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people don't know if it's going to, what it's going to cost them. Is the lawyer really going to deliver the results? And if you think about it, first thing we tell the client, we do not guarantee the result, right? You know, not many professions out there where you do not guarantee that something going to happen. You know, you take your car to the mechanic, you expect mechanic to fix the car and the car going to be better, otherwise you're not going to pick up your car.
Right.
You call the plumber in, you expect the plumber to fix it. With a lawyer, you know, in a lot of cases, you don't know what's going to happen because things can go either way. I had a case the other day where the woman, it's a contract issue, mm-hmm. and the woman has a trucking company which she provides dispatch for other trucks. And there is an issue where the broker did not pay her, and as a result of it, she did not pay a driver, and they have a contract that's independent driver, and they have a contract where it says that, you know, in event she doesn't pay, get paid, she does not have to pay because she doesn't have the money to
right.
pay it. It doesn't happen often with that type of contract, but so happened in her contract, she has that. So what happened was, it's not a lot of money, but to her it is a lot of money what happened, and obviously it's a lot of money to that driver.
Mm-hmm.
So the driver sued her in a small claims court originally, and the driver won in a small claims court. She appealed before she ever came to me. They had some other lawyer handling that portion of the thing, because if you're a company, you need to have an attorney representing you. And now there is appeal, and now there is a next hearing or next step. So she came to me with the next step and said to me, what's the most beneficial to me things could happen and what's the most negative thing could happen? And as I explained to her the thing, it's a really wild range of what could happen as a result of it. And, you know, you cannot really narrow it down because there's so much depends on the client's credibility. It's not necessarily I could read the law and I could tell you what the law says, but at the end of the day, there are a lot of things depends on the credibility of the client and what's juries or arbitration panel, wherever this case going to end up, looking and assessing the credibility of the person more even than the contract language itself. You know, there is a shift of possibility of the contract. There's so many different things that could happen. But at the end of the day, it's a very interesting thing. So you do not guarantee.
But one thing you can guarantee is they're going to get the best representation and the hardest work. And that is something, that's all somebody can ask for. In other words, you never really know. Listen, we don't have a magic wand. No one knows. You can never know. But what you do.
Listen, when you hire somebody, that's the least that you should expect. And you should expect the same thing if you're hiring an attorney.
Right, exactly.
But it doesn't happen.
No, it's true. It doesn't happen. You're right.
Banks, you know, Sonny, I could tell you that much. I know in banks firm, they do get that. In a lot of firms, people do not. And in your field, I don't know if in your field, clients switch lawyers.
It does happen.
Okay. Mm-hmm. In my field, it happens probably more often than not because the difference, I think, I don't do any workman compensation, but my understanding is there's a lot of hearings, just a status hearing, so the client knows that there is something happening.
Correct. And I think the major difference is in workers' comp, you can get on the fee a lot earlier than you can in a personal injury case.
What happens in my case is, for example, the client comes in to you and they were involved in a car accident, right? So the first thing and the most important thing at that stage for the client to make sure that their car is repaired if it's a car accident, mm-hmm. right? You get that, but then there's nothing really happening for a very long time because the client is treating. So we do not need to do anything. We just need the client to treat. And basically what we tell client, when you finish treating, call us, and then we will start getting all your medical bills and reports together, send it to an insurance company and get your money. It's significant recoveries in my situation, but we do not do anything in the interim. And sometimes client call us, and we always talk to the client. But a lot of time, different lawyers, they don't talk to the clients, or they say to the client, you have to get your property damages yourself because we don't get paid for it. Like, we don't charge for property damages. We just do it gratis for the client.
Right.
A lot of lawyers say, oh, no, I don't do this. You do it yourself. And that annoys me to no end because then I usually want to say to that lawyer, and by the way, you want client to settle their own case and bring you the check? I mean, really. I mean,
no,
you need to do something. You need to earn your
I'll tell you, but you know, the firm culture, you know, you're a leader. That's a fact. Okay, and we talk about this, Sonny and I, often on air. But firm culture. You were telling us about your daughters and that level of success. The firm culture. What is it that you teach, not only to your employees and your team, but also to your children that you know sets such a level of success? Because nobody wins all the time. Life's not like that. Everybody has a bad day on a sports field, as we know, or in life. But you have a trail of success that you're leaving behind, and it's just impressive across the board. What is your secret there?
It's not a secret. You have to care. Number one, you have to care. If you do not care, you're not going to be successful. That's, one of the old expressions somebody said, the client doesn't care how much lawyer knows. The client wants to know how much lawyer cares. So that's the first thing. The second thing I teach my children, I teach my staff, that the clients are the most important thing. Somebody entrusted you was working for them. You have to put everything aside, whether you have a good day, you have a bad day, you got up on the wrong side of the bed, is irrelevant. You have to dedicate that time to that client and nothing else. Otherwise, you are not showing that this is the most caring time for you. That just goes without saying. Clients takes priority over everything.
Who was your mentor and a role model as you were, you know, not only moving up as a lawyer, but, you know, as growing up? That, because you just don't look that from the bricks, man.
No, that's true.
I don't know. I think when I was very, very lucky, I will tell you this much. I tried my first arbitration case the next day after I passed my bar exam. I was with a law firm that did not have trial lawyer. And I wanted to do the trial, so they figured, you know, let Mikey try it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did.
Mikey try. Now, you know, it's life cereal.
Yeah. And they did not care, even though there were much more seasoned attorneys there. They just did not want to be in a courtroom. Not every lawyer likes to be in a courtroom. I did, and because I was very young, I was kind of novelty. At that time, we're talking about 88, 89, 90. Not many women were trial lawyers, number one. And especially not very many women who were 26 years old, 27 years old, that were at the trial. So every senior attorney at that point, we didn't have this idea of sexual harassment then. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any ideas that, you know, men should not be nice to the women because it could be misinterpreted. It was just people were nice.
Yeah.
And a lot of old timers were kind of very, very kind to me. I remember being at Miss Manor Society, that's a trial lawyer's dinner, and sitting between Chuck Peruto Sr. and Mark Mandel. Both of them died, unfortunately, but they were great lawyers. And they were trading the war stories. I was in my glory. I thought it was just the most fun thing to do. Or when I took my LLM program, one of our teachers was Herb Cosby, who was like one of the funniest lawyers.
He was.
He had two great expressions. I mean, they were jokes, obviously, but they were two great expressions. One of them was, when you are in the courtroom, the level playing field is only your second alternative. So, you know, it's one of, and the other story that he said, you know why jury dislike the lawyers? And we'll say why. And he would say, you know what? If when lawyer goes into courtroom and there is a magic wand that switched them from one side to another, they would be just as effectively arguing the opposite point of view. So, you know, you got to adopt. And those people were very interesting. Right now, when I see a generation of lawyers coming up, we are at the tail end of artists. And we are at the beginning of the technocrats. Is it good? I don't know. I don't think my presentation is that PowerPoint presentation that I did in the office. And how do you switch it in front of the jury when you see the jury yawning?
True.
And you have your next slide coming up?
Right.
They're no longer artists. I mean, the trial lawyers, actually, I just had this just conversation with your receptionist, who's absolutely a lovely woman. The trial lawyers are the storytellers. Mm-hmm. And I want to see if I'm grabbing your attention with this story, and if I'm not, you know what? I'll switch to another story. You might hate Goldilocks. Okay, I'm going to tell you the story about Little Red Riding Hood. You know, you need to be able to think on your feet.
Well, it's interesting because you meant the word adapt.
And it's hard to do that with, you know,
with a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, with this, you know, technocrat era, because, you know, once it's locked into a PowerPoint, how do you really change it?
So from my standpoint, from a layman's standpoint, I think we've all been in a meeting, at least a couple meetings in our lifetime, where you're in the middle of a pitch or whatever. Of course, I'm not in front of a jury, but, you know, you might say, oh, man, I'm losing them, or I'm losing. You better come up with something that's going to grab that individual. Except in your case, Marina, it's 12 of them.
12 or 8, yeah.
8 or 12. And normally I would suggest just start crying right there. but, you know, it's a great point you make. And performing. That you know, you're not only preparing, but you're performing in front of the jury. I also think empathy's got to be a good a trait that you have, so that you can understand what they're, you know, what might make them tick, and what, you know, because if you're talking to anybody, and I'm sure you've seen individuals, and I'll say this to Sonny and Marina, you may learn what to do and what not to do probably by just watching some of the individuals that are on the other side. I've heard of attorneys sit there and talk about somebody who's just ticking off the jury just mm-hmm. by not being friendly. You must sit there and go, man, you know, let me check that one off. I won't be going in that direction. How much have you learned in those
situations? All the time. For some reason, there is some attorney that think that they need to put this horse and pony show where they come out as a pit bull. It does not work. It never works. The jury can see through it. What I also think is, when you're trying the jury trial, a part of your credibility, just a tiny part of the credibility, you should transfer to your client. You should transfer to the jury. And if all you're doing is barking at everybody, first of all, the judge gets tired of that. And when judge starts sustaining the other person's objective, objection, objection, sustain, 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 the jury starts thinking, but this lawyer is not doing something right. The judge does not like him or her. The court crier might look at that person very differently because he barks. The jury is going to be turned off because there's two people in a courtroom that they trust going in. It's the crier, and crier are one of the most important people in the courtroom because they're the one who bring lunch to the jury. They're the one who bring the jury in. They're the one who escort the jury out. Believe it or not, the jury senses crier mood. I am always very nice to court criers. I think they are one of the key people in the courtroom. And obviously the judge is, because everybody's like looking at him, here's this guy, came from Mount Sinai, and we need to listen to him because everybody else listening to them.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, just to add, I mean, the focus should always be on the client, regardless of what side you represent. So putting on this dog and pony show so that you're the focus isn't going to win you a lot of favor.
Any aha moments, and in particular from courtroom experiences that that you're particularly not only proud of, but that moved you? Maybe it was a David and Goliath situation, or a situation where you learned, okay, nothing's impossible.
There is 10,000 aha moments in your lifetime, and you know what is an aha moment? When you have another lawyer from your office trying the case, and they call you and they say, oh, it's going great, jury loves me, you know you have to rush down there and try to settle this case. This is like aha moment to know him.
You know, it reminds me a little bit, because when I think about, I said it, I'm going to elaborate. So I was in a rock band for a lot of years, and our manager booked us in New York. I'll never, ever forget it. And he booked us in front of this band. It was like a Jimi Hendrix band. They were sponsored by a big company and all. And the way they did it in New York was that they had that band, and then you played, and then that band played again. I remember sitting there thinking to myself, I'm going to smash my manager right in his mouth when I see him. I'm being sarcastic when I say that. We walked up there, and they gave us their equipment to use. And I'll never ever. So we're in New York, and it was like do or die. Did we come here for nothing? I remember walking off that stage, and I grew 6 inches. I'm thinking to myself, we can do this. You know, I mean, that was an aha moment. Okay, we're ready for this type of situation. I imagine attorneys, especially young attorneys, or at least when you're young and you take that first case or whatever, or a specific type of plateau, or you're going up against another attorney where you succeeded, and you walked out of there and it just builds your confidence.
Well, my aha moment, that type of aha moment, it's not necessarily build my confidence. I was confident already. But if I have to describe a case, I cannot describe it, a lot of things, because there is a non-disclosure agreement, but some of it is in the public eye, where I represented actually a prince who got sued about it's Order of Malta, and they split in 11th century between benevolent order and the military order, okay? And the question was the right to the name of that order. And Judge Diamond, who is, I think, a great federal judge, it was in front of Judge Diamond in a federal court case. And the other side was represented by three lawyers. There was a lawyer from Los Angeles, there was a lawyer from Chicago, and there was a local counsel. And here, this young girl, who's me, well, not so young by that time, but doesn't matter, by myself. If you think about it, I came from Ukraine, didn't speak a word of English. I am sitting in a conference room, Judge Diamond's conference room, which is sort of his office and a conference room. It's huge, so you could prepare. The conference room table sits 24.
Wow.
Okay? And you're sitting at that conference room, and there is discussion about the order, and there is a name of the city in that order, okay? So I'm trying not to disclose a lot of it, but just interesting thing about it. So there's two different prints involved, the Italian, the order from 11th century, and it disputes to the name, okay? How amazing this whole thing. And here's this little girl from Ukraine representing one of them, and so it has to do with, we want to use the location, and the other side wants to preclude us from using that location, and I'm making the arguments, and there is a memo submitted, blah, blah, blah. And that was my aha moment that, you arrived. Mm-hmm. When you have a case like that, you arrived. And then Judge Diamond is presiding over that conference, and he looks at those three people, and they're saying, so you think such and such a name could be copyrighted? And they're like, yeah, we can copyright a name. So he looks at him, and he goes, you know what? I think United States might have a problem with United Trucking. And I think at that point, they understood that what they want to do cannot be done, right. And we resolved the case shortly thereafter with a favorable conclusion, but that's what happened.
Awesome.
I mean, that was an awesome moment. Yeah.
So
if I have to write, it was not necessarily the financially beneficial case or anything else, but if I have to write an interesting moment of legal career, mm-hmm. This is something that was totally, totally interesting. And I know I could see in Sonny's eyes, he's thinking to himself, once we're off the air, I'm going to ask her more details about that case.
I tell you, I think this is one of the funniest things I've ever heard when you said, as soon as your associate tells you, the jury loves me.
Yeah, that's great.
You leave your sandwich on the table and you take off. But that's a great moment, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a game-changing moment. I think that in understanding who you are and what your capabilities are.
Yeah.
I mean, Sonny, anything in your past where you?
Well, my practice is a bit different. I mean, it's more of a serial litigation. It's not where you show up and you have court with an opponent.
I mean, you could have said, it's the first time I did radio with you, Joe.
I mean, it would probably be my largest settlement. I think that settlement is highlighted on my webpage. It's an unusual situation where you get $1 million settlement in a workers' compensation case. So that was probably my aha moment in workers' comp.
And certainly you think about that, and you think about those individuals, the individuals who work for you, and you know the ability for them to kind of learn from what you've set up. You know, it kind of your success. You could read it on your website. I mean, it's right there, especially when you're a successful personal injury attorney. It's looking right at you, and the expectations are right there. But as a workers' compensation attorney, you don't have to read that anywhere but from individuals who've retained you.
Sure.
Because it's their life, it's their livelihood. And, you know, Marina, you mentioned not every attorney is you know, hitting it and getting it, or thinking client first, or at least exuding that type of situation. When somebody does, and you change somebody's life, at least in such a big way, they never forget it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. My other aha moment was, you're right. You know, the big numbers do speak for themselves. Our first really large verdict was Valentine's Day jury in Lackawanna County. $4.2 million was, you know, when you hit your first big number, it makes a difference.
Especially in a place where you're really not expected to get that kind of number, and Lackawanna County is one of those counties where you're not expected to get that kind of number.
When you're dealing with that type of situation, there must be so much that goes into it, including not only the information and the numbers and the representation, but dealing with that jury, being able to touch that jury and that judge,
Joe, I can tell you this much. It's not like the number comes out of thin air. We're not magicians. For the people who are listening to us, I want to make sure that I do not build up the expectation. If you have a couple scratches on your arm, I don't care if I tried the case, F. Lee Bailey, or anybody else in this world, you cannot make a that much of a difference. The good lawyers make difference. However, what in a personal injury field, and that's where the expectation management also comes in, it's based on your injury. So the person was severely injured. I cannot say, oh, it's all me. They had a couple scratches and I did it. No. Obviously, you have to have a good client. You have to have a significant injury. And you have to have a commercial policy on another side.
Is there a lot of pressure when you have those things as an attorney? You can see it. You can see the forest through the trees. You now have to, carry the ball.
You have to cover the ball, and you also have to manage the client's expectation. Because you know what? The $4.2 million, it's easy to try the case when the offer is too low, right? Mm-hmm. But what do you do when the offer is significant? So, for example, in this particular case, we were lucky. I think the highest offer was maybe $200,000 or $300,000.
Because if you would have got
a million, but that was easy decision.
Sure.
Okay. But what do you do? And in this case, as the case progressed, the offers got larger. But what do you do when you have a settlement offer, let's say, of $2 million, right? And the client is there saying, well, I'm not sure what I want to do.
I think it goes back to what you said earlier, having that good client, that client that trusts in you.
And the client understands it.
Yeah.
You know, many, many years ago, if you remember, there was a clothing store, and they had a commercial, the educated customer is our best client, or the educated client's our best customer. I forgot what exactly, but that's the idea.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, what you're saying, that you got to educate them.
You got to educate them, and you got to, for them to understand it, and, it's not easy. And sometimes there's just the opposite. You see the number, you know from your personal experience, this is as good as it gets. It's not going to get any better. And you have a client who said, I want my day in court.
Right.
What do you do? How do you prevent that from happening? Happened to me. We had a number. I begged the client to take the number. The client said, I want my day in court. I actually had a client sign a piece of paper where we wrote it down and said, this is the offer. We highly recommend for you to take the offer. We think, you know, it's a good offer. If you want to reject the offer, that's fine. I will try the case because mm-hmm. I made a commitment to you. But sign here on a dotted line.
That's a good idea.
The client signed. We have a settlement conference before the hearing. Judge said, you have that number? I said, yes, it's offered to me. He said, you know, I suggest you guys take it. We bring the client in. Judge sits the client down and says, you know, Mr. So-and-so, we have, you know, I was informed that there is such and such an offer on the case. Are you rejecting that offer? And that person, just stubborn enough, says, yeah, I am rejecting that offer. I want my day in court. We go to court. The case is in trial. This was like, I cannot tell you about this case enough. You know, every case has, I am in the middle of my closing, standing in front of my jury, and all of a sudden there's cry in a courtroom. You know, I try not to pay attention because, and a good thing I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, but still I have a flow. My client is crying. Judge stops everything, says, why are you crying, Mr. So-and-so? And he says, oh, I'm relieving that, and it's so horrible, Your Honor, what happened to me. And the woman who was my second chair is trying to calm him down and gives him a tissue. I mean, it was just like a moment. Hmm. And surely enough, we did not get anywhere near what the offer was, but the guy got his day in court. And there's nothing I could have done.
Do you think that particular client felt satisfied when he left?
Yes.
Did he?
Yes. Funny thing.
Why do you say that?
Funny thing about it, because we walk out of the courtroom, okay, he's there, and his wife was asking him to take the offer. Mm-hmm. We were actually the fourth lawyer on the case, and before we ever went into it, I had him sign the document that if I get the certain number, he has to accept it. And he did sign this document, and we got way above that number.
Right.
And he said, well, can I change my mind? And I had a soft moment in my heart, and I said, yeah. And the wife thanked me, and he thanked me. We're walking out of the courtroom after everything. The jury came back with a number, and they thanked me.
Well,
sometimes they want their day in court. I don't know why. He was of particular ethnic persuasion that probably great divine told him that he needs to have a day in court. I cannot tell you why.
Interesting.
And actually, fast forward, they refer me their person that they knew that was involved in an accident, and we handled the case and handled successfully. But he wanted that day in court. And
right.
There's sometimes people just needs that type of a closure. I've tried everything, believe me, to persuade that person to settle the case. We still got the result.
Mm-hmm.
It just was not what
it could have been.
It could have been hell of a lot larger, and it could have been hell of a lot easier without everybody spending the time and effort.
Was the individual well off? Was he independently successful to the point where it didn't matter to him?
I don't know, Joe. Was he that successful? Yeah, I would see. You know what? The other thing is not everybody's out there for money. It's another very, very strange thing. But I learned something from that experience. And the next time when we are in this situation and I'm managing somebody's expectation, I am saying to them, I am not in it for glory. I am in it for end result.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you learn from those expectations, and there is no such a thing as empty victories.
Right, right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's phenomenal.
Yeah,
that's
great story.
It's, you know, just thinking about it is... Mm-hmm. We're going to pay some bills. We're going to have more from the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks and Sonny's guest, Marina Katz of the law firm of Katz, Jameson & Associates, after the break.
Suffering a work injury or any type of personal injury can be a painful and traumatic experience. What can make it even more difficult for a patient is trying to navigate and find the quality medical care they need for their particular injury. Healthmark Enterprises is a full-service medical coordination and marketing company started in 1994 by CEO Robin Lewison that takes all the worry and complications out of treatment for a work or personal injury. From coordinating full-service medical treatment with the top medical professionals, providers, and specialists to overseeing patient compliance and providing one-on-one personalized communications with clients. Healthmark Enterprises handles the entire treatment process for injured workers and those suffering personal injuries so they can just concentrate on getting better. Healthmark Enterprises believes that being injured should not limit one's access to great medical care. Now, more than ever, an injured person needs an advocate on their side. Contact Healthmark Enterprises at 215-563-1315. That's 215-563-1315. Healthmark Enterprises. Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Pain and Wellness Hour. Sonny Banks. Sonny's guest is Marina Katz of the law firm of Katz, Jameson & Associates. Marina is not only a fantastic attorney, also an entrepreneur and a former owner of a radio station, somebody who's been very successful and a longtime guest on the program. And I must say, the story you just told was captivating. I'll tell you, just thinking about that process and listening to your attorney, and that type of advice—that's a big responsibility. You know, when you know that it's a good offer.
It is a big responsibility, but and you know your client's limitation. When clients might not know their own limitation, you know you've done it for. You know, I've done it for 33 years, so been there, done that, and the clients, it's their first case. They've never been inside the courtroom, or they, you know, watch Perry Mason on TV. Does right. not make you understanding how the courtroom operates.
But the flip side is, you have to tell the client. I mean, ultimately, this is your case. It's your decision. Despite my recommendation, and I've been doing this for over 35 years, so I know when the offer is good and when it's not. I'm recommending that you take it, and if the client says they don't want to take it, then you have no choice but to try the case.
Yeah, you do, and you got to put your best and you put your heart in and hope for the best. But yeah, mm-hmm. you're absolutely right. And you know, how do you give this to the client? Same thing when, you know, we often call and we have the offer, and I call the client and I say, well, Mr. So-and-so, Mrs. So-and-so, this is the offer on the case. And, you know, the first thing the client says, what should I do? Which is reasonable.
Sure.
And I always say, listen, we could go to courtroom and we could get more and we could get less, but I'm rolling dice with your money. You tell me what you want to do, I'll do whatever you want to do. I don't have any problem with it. I could give you my honest opinion about it. If you want me to try the case, I'm happy to try the case. If you want to settle the case, I'm happy to settle the case. But I will give you my honest opinion. And from that point on, you make your own decision, because at the end of the day, you have to be happy with the decision you make.
Yeah. Marina, your success level allows you to to make that decision without even considering. In other words, you sometimes spend a lot of money on experts and investigations and all those things, But at the same time, you're the client is always number one. But that's a big responsibility.
And I'm okay with it. You know, I don't think of it as a money spent. I think of it as a money invested.
No, I get it. But
even in the cases that you don't take.
Oh, I don't. Listen, if the cases I don't take, it's over and done with me.
Right. But I assume some cases you have to vet it in terms of paying for experts and getting records before you make a decision.
So I'm very, very lucky. And I could tell you where I'm lucky and where there is a problem. In an automobile accident case, if it is strictly negligence, one car hit the other, and you know, most of the time you know up front who is right and who is wrong. That's mm-hmm. kind of an easy situation. If my guy is stopped and he got rear-ended, it's a no-brainer, we're going to win. If my guy is going straight, the other person's making left in front of them, we're going to win.
Right.
If my guy doesn't have a stop sign and another person pulls up from the street that has a stop sign, we're going to win. So the liability in my cases, you know, as far as a car accident, is easy to establish. Okay, I do not have to spend a lot of money and a lot of times in those cases. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, obviously, you need an expert if there is a malfunctioning of the car. Sometimes you need an expert to figure out if there is a defect of the road. Sometimes you need those experts, but that's down the road. Most of the time, in an initial stage, it's okay. You establish that. The other thing, you know, if it's a slip and fall case, again, it's pretty much easy. You take the client, you take the investigator, you go to the scene, you take the photographs where the client fell, and you can pretty much establish if it is problem with the site where my client fell, or my client come in already with the photographs. So that makes it also easy. I know if right. there is a liability on the property owner very early on. Where the money are spent, and again, it's not that much money to spend in the beginning, is in the medical malpractice cases, but to get initial opinion, it's maybe $1,500, $2,500 to get that initial opinion on the case from your expert. And, you know, we, thank God, in all these years I've been practicing law, we have a group of experts that we usually go back to that could give us that initial, I call it smell test,
sure,
right?
Sure.
You know, if the case...
Folks that you can trust.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And if it smells like a case, then I'm deploying more money to figure out exactly what's happened. But as far as a car accident and slip and fall, my initial investment is very little. You know, it might be cost of investigator, might be cost of getting a police report. You know, some cases, obviously, if the case has serious injuries, you start spending money right away
right.
because you want to make sure that you explore every possibility and find every insurance coverage.
Sure.
But you know what? If my person is stopped at the stop sign and they're rear-ended by, and I'm not going to name the company because I don't want, but let's say a very big international or national company that, it, you know, the truck driver did not see my guy mm-hmm. and rear-ended him or did not stop in time, you know, my outlay of money is very little because, obviously, I have a liability established right there
right.
and then.
No, that's a great
just,
case.
That's a great case. Mm-hmm. Like, so everybody's drooling about it. As a matter of fact, what we do is at our Christmas party, we always have, like, ideal case as a Christmas gift for the office. And basically it's a Santa, and we have, like, you know, somebody in the office writes a story about the Santa and how the Santa gets hit and all this. You know, it's interesting stories. We really have an interesting story.
So Santa's driving his sleigh. He's coming down. He comes down on Henry Avenue, and boom, here comes an Amazon truck and hits him right. Wait, hold on. And the Amazon driver, you know, is an elf who works somewhere else. He's absolutely sloshed, right?
Right.
Out of his mind.
He was just at the party. Right.
He was just at the point. I get that's funny.
I mean, you know, there is no end to the lawyer's fantasy.
Mm-hmm. So we got a few minutes left. Just want to kind of cover real quick, if you would list the actual specialties. I know I'm talking about PI that you handle.
Okay. So dream case, obviously, is a car accident case with a lot of insurance. And my I also want to quickly just say to all of our listeners, please look at your insurance policy and check it out if you have limited tort or your full tort on the policy. If you have a limited tort on your policy, again, it doesn't mean limited coverage. Just read your policy. It's going to say tort option on your policy. If anything, it's going to be like public announcement here. If you have a limited tort, call your insurance agent, call your insurance company, go on the internet, whichever way you obtain your insurance, and immediately change it on the full tort. This was sponsored by Sunny, and it's a public announcement.
That's the best advice.
Marina, you don't have to worry. I have full coverage.
But not full tort.
Right.
You need to make sure.
Right. I'm just kidding but that happens a lot.
Laugh all you want.
And the same with the uninsured and underinsured
today,
coverage or protection. Make sure you have that.
Yeah. Today, before I came here, a gentleman came who I know. Father of this gentleman, a very intelligent family, good people. There is no way in the world I saw there was a limited tort. And I am looking at this gentleman's policy, and I think steam came out of my ears. It's a limited tort policy. After this gentleman knows me, knows how I have this on a mission to make sure every person I touch knows this little thing about insurance.
I know, Marina, but the insurance companies constantly lobby folks. Yeah, I mean, you see them everywhere.
About just the rate, just what you're getting.
Right.
Yep. You know, we all hear about the Rogers rate.
So that you can get on the road and drive. Yeah. But that insurance isn't going to protect you if you get into a serious accident.
It doesn't include bodily injury insurance. Everybody thinks they got full coverage, but they don't realize is, there is no such thing as full coverage. And if there was, in the theoretically, just talk about the body of the car, you'll get your dents or whatever fixed. But if your family's in the car, you have very minimal insurance.
Coverage, right. Yep. Yeah. People don't realize, oh, it's not going to be my fault in an accident. Don't understand. In order for you to start claim, it has to be not your fault in an accident. So it's a very interesting thing. I am willing for free. That's how much I'm on a mission to cure the world of this limited tort policy. Anybody who wants for me to review their insurance policy to see if they have a right coverage, I'm dedicating my time. I'm putting my time where my mouth is. I am dedicated to rid the world of the limited tort policies and make sure everyone who we touch have a right insurance policy. So make sure you have your full tort policy. And another thing is, people do not realize how many cars are on the road without insurance at all.
Especially
in Philadelphia, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or how many irresponsible people out there that will hit your vehicle and try to escape and successfully escape, and then you have nobody to sue. So if there's another provision you could afford to have you on a policy, please have uninsured motorist on your policy together with a full tort on your policy. That's just something that I am willing to check everyone. I don't care if there is all 2.5 million people from the city of Philadelphia call me and say, Marina, can you check my policy for me?
How come people don't know?
I don't know. People don't want to, you know, I'm also another expression that I have. People believe in what they believe and hear what they want to hear. I think it's just that simple. When we get to the situation where we're not certain, we don't know how to read something, it's sort of like me and the computers. You know, I try not to get involved.
Yeah, I think it's the nature of insurance in general, because people think, I'll get the cheapest because I'm never going to use it.
Right.
You know, I'll just get enough.
So I can get on the road. Right. But they don't realize
what rights they're giving away, how much money they're leaving on a table, and they might really, really need it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, how many people, when they walk in your office, think they actually have full tort because they think they have
full coverage?
Full coverage.
Yep, tons. And the only way you could persuade them of their misunderstanding is by showing them declaration page of their policy. When they look at that declaration page and they see, yes, I have collision, I have comprehensive, and then there is a line underneath and this policy provides limited tort, then it dawns on them that it's there. Yeah, believe me, insurance companies do not put in a large print limited tort or full tort on the front of the policy.
Right. And
the worst is New Jersey, by the way. In at least in Pennsylvania, they're giving you an option, and if you do not sign it, you assign full tort policy, which is a good thing. In New Jersey, it's a lot worse. In New Jersey, if you don't sign it, it is limited. It's not, well, there it's called lawsuit threshold. It's not a limited tort, but it means exactly the same thing. So unless you sign it that you want zero threshold, you are deemed to have that limited tort policy.
Well,
all right. So if you would, Marina, your contact information at the law firm, if anybody is looking for your services and if they want to get their policy reviewed.
Okay. So go to, actually call. The best thing to do is 215-396-9001. That's my phone number. They could go to the website, Philly Lawyers. It's one word. Or they could send me by email. It's Marina, like my first name, M-A-R-I-N-A, at M like Marina, K-A-T-S, K as in King, A as in Apple, T as in Tom, S as in Sam. That's my last name, .com. So it's Marina at MCATS.com. And they could send me the policy, scan it, send it to me, the policy for review. We'll respond it the same day. I don't care if the whole world send me the policies.
That's great.
It is.
I will respond it and tell you what I think your policy should have. It's like sort of a checkup.
Absolutely.
You know how you do a Jiffy Lube checkup for your car?
Yep.
I am willing to do a legal Jiffy Lube.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
Fantastic. Sonny Banks.
Banks Law, 215-561-1000. Our web address is www.bankslaw.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Pain and Wellness Hour with Sonny Banks. Of course, we want to thank Marina Katz of Katz, Jameson & Associates. Marina, another fantastic
podcast. Always a pleasure.
And it is always a pleasure. Sonny, thank you so much, Joe. Thank you for keeping us on time.
Absolutely.
And keeping us going forward, so we appreciate your expertise, Sonny. It's such a pleasure to always see you.
You too.
You have your Sonny personality.
Absolutely. And, of course, we want to thank the listeners for tuning in. And, of course, we want to thank Tony Shuler from Pinnacle Medical Plus for making it all happen.
Thank you, Tony.
On behalf of
everyone on the
broadcast, I'm Joe Dougherty. And let's not forget Andrew Walker.
The guy who is responsible for you being late.
See, that was really my fault, but we'll give Andrew a pass on that. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Have a great day.